Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin-I's look at this week in the Capitol. Wish I was there. This week is very interesting. Senator Erpenbach accused the Republicans of again hurting teachers, making Senator Darling angry. I asked State Public Defender Kelly Thompson why the best and brightest in our law school should become public defenders. Wisconsin-I went to a one-year-later forum on violence in Sherman Park, the Dark Store controversy, and a State Journal editor says, when you look at news on the internet, you should be discerning. Excuse me, wish I was there.
Now, this isn't a unicorns and lollipop kind of thing. This is what we as legislators on both sides of the aisle are supposed to be doing. This should be our first official charge of business, is making sure our public schools are taken care of and they're strong. We're not doing that. Governor Walker hasn't done that. He was giddy cutting public schools in his first couple of budgets. Just giddy. And look at what I did to them, that damn teachers union.
I mean, come on. We value teachers. I'm sick of this victimizing teachers. And I just want to set the record straight. Let's agree that education is all of our priority. It is, because it's the number one funded program in our state. It has always been that. I just cannot let these comments about racism and our policies and anti-teacher, it's very disturbing and it's not accurate. And I think sometimes your message is taken seriously by some people because we don't speak up and say, that's not right. And I'm tired of it.
There's no such thing as a dark store loophole. And really what this legislation is an effort to legalize what has been, for the past 10 years or so, an unlawful assessment practice.
The truth of the matter is, you know, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is sitting here telling you how terrible this is when John Menard is on their board of directors. I mean, seriously, when Don Millis, one of their attorneys who admitted at the assembly hearing 50% of his income is derived from suing municipalities on tax cases, is their tax advisor. So if you wonder where their position is, I think you really need to ask some really penetrating questions to them.
And you love your job.
Love it.
Okay, my question is this. You're meeting with a bright law school student about to graduate next spring. What's your elevator pitch in terms of why she or he should become a public defender?
It's the most difficult but also the most rewarding work you can do in the criminal justice system. You essentially are that first individual oftentimes, and by first individual, first person, at least with someone in our office, that is meeting someone at their most vulnerable point in their lives. They, just by definition, they're poor. They oftentimes, not always, but they oftentimes have other obstacles that they're trying to overcome. It could be mental health issues. We have a significant number of people in the criminal justice system with mental health issues. Alcohol and drug issues, educational barriers, a whole host of issues. Again, poor, so they're struggling with that economic burden as well. And they've been charged with a crime.
What we're seeing when we talk to ex-offenders is the fact that they, you know, I've applied for 20 jobs or I've done X, Y, and Z, and I'm just not getting a break. And so unfortunately, they end up in the same neighborhood, in the same situation, with the same social networks that led them to prison in the first place.
In private business, if you have a budget for the electric bill and wages and gasoline and whatever, and you budget that we're going to replace the carpeting in this room, but February 1st rolls around and the roof starts to leak. You only have so much money budgeted for one, but now you're going to have to use it for something else because the roof is a heck of a lot more important than the carpeting. In government, you just do both because you can go to the taxpayers and say you get the money and you get it. The taxpayers are not a bottomless pit.
I do think that people really need to learn how to pay more attention to the source of their information. Right now, people in this country are seeing things pop up in their feeds, their social media feeds, and they're making decisions based on it without even looking at where the information came from.
J. JR, we're on the verge of a final push here. Mm-hmm. I mean, next week's going to be very important. They're going to come back on Tuesday. They're going to try to do the budget, try to do taxes. Let's focus on, and also Foxconn at the joint finance level, correct?
Yep.
To set the table for the final, for the next week in the full legislature.
If all goes well, they can knock it out next week. If someone takes it on the floor the week of the 11th, the Senate follows a couple days later, or that following week of the 18th. The governor's desk signed by the 22nd, which is the deadline.
Yep, because he said end of summer, and that happens to be the end of summer. But let's talk about some of the elements. Let's talk about transportation funding first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just the announcement yesterday that the feds are going to give us $66.4 million, which is the most they've ever given us. Does that trigger the contingent clause to get the bonding for I-94 in Racine County?
Good question. I'm not sure about that because the Foxconn Bill 1 hasn't passed yet.
True.
It's not sure if it's retroactive. But that amount of money is not enough. It's not going to save like a big project or like all of a sudden expand, you know, another lane on the interstate somewhere. But it's better to have the money than to not.
Yeah.
But the framework we were told a week ago seems to still be in place, which is roughly $150 million in new bonding on top of what the Foxconn bill has.
Mm-hmm.
There's this hybrid fee, hybrid electric cars, about $100. From what Fiscal Bureau told us, you know, it generates enough money to pay for some of the new borrowing, but not all of it, the debt on that. And, you know, that's kind of roughly the outline we've been talked about, and that's, I think, what's going to be a big piece of what's in place.
Well, Representative Sanfilippo threw out these new revenue-raising ideas, which I don't think are going to have any traction. But the point is, you still are dealing with how to finance the East-West Freeway from the Miller Park to the State Fair.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't been resolved. That's got to be resolved before they pass the transportation budget.
Oh, or they just don't do it. I mean, there's a possibility they say, you know, we're going to pass on that project and push it off. You know, that's the deal. When you have a limited amount of money, you have to say, what are we going to do? What's the priority? Mm-hmm. Is 94 East-West a priority or 39 North-South? I think 39 North-South, priority right now, they're in the thick of that one, going to six lanes from Madison to the state line. That seems to be where ahead of the line than 94 East-West.
And it seems to me there's about three elements working on tax questions. Are they going to have the down payment on the end of the personal property tax? Coyinga, Representative Coyinga, still wants to get rid of the AMT. Oh, that's only $8 million, right?
Somewhere in that
small
ballpark.
Change.
Yes.
And what do they do with the governor's proposed income tax cuts?
Gone? Those have been pretty much off the table for a while because they want to hoard cash or free up cash for other things. So it's not like those things are going to happen. And that's been where they've been at for a long time, to be quite frank.
Okay, joint finance job two next week is the Foxconn deal. Aren't you sensing that there's going to be some pretty minor tweaks?
Looking at some.
I think there's a TIF issue that's got to be.
If the Senate, the idea is if the Senate changes it, so the Senate's voting on the budget one day, the Senate could take up Foxconn the same time. Somebody passes the budget, sends it over. Senate sends Foxconn back. The Assembly concurs the changes off the governor's desk. Well ahead of the September 30th deadline, had that bill done.
Okay. The biggest thing they got done this week, of course, was K-12 financing.
Mm-hmm.
They agreed on a $639 million upper over 2 years, very close to the governor. In fact, we read the governor's press conference. This is a major victory. They're phasing in low spending increases by the low spending district to take them to 9,800. Their referendum votes must coincide with general elections. And
twice a year you can do them?
April and November?
No, two dates per year you can do a referendum.
Oh, thanks. Okay. And $125 per student for ninth grade for technology. Any major surprises in the final K-12
package? They moved some pieces around. Like Governor Walker went to the sparsity package, about $20 million. Sparsity helps districts that are basically rural, small districts. He wanted to add a new level of sparsity aid. They said, no, we're going to use that money elsewhere pretty much. The choice stuff was really the big change for what they did compared to Walker, because Walker didn't really do anything for the choice program in his budget.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they'd get more money.
He supported it. But
yeah. They'd get more money because statutorily, if you boost aid for public schools, the choice program gets more money per student.
Yeah.
The limit on students enrolling goes up 1% every year. That stuff wasn't changed. So he basically left it as is, but joint finance to kind of delivered something else for the choice program.
Right, and let's talk about that choice program. It's a pretty dramatic expansion when you take it from 185 of the federal poverty guidelines to 20. I got off the phone to the Fiscal Bureau, and the two-year changes to the statewide choice. Now,
mm-hmm.
X number of students will stay in it in Milwaukee, X number will stay in Racine. But when you look at the predicted expansion of the statewide program, 58% increase in students over 2 years, from the 2016-17 school year to 2018-19, go from 4,500 in statewide to 7,150. pretty dramatic. Now, that was kind of a sticking point. And Representative Senator Vukmir said, take all the limits off.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of that increase you're talking about was going to happen even because of the gradual step up. The percent of kids from
2% to 3%
can go in.
Yeah.
About 550 because of the raise in the income limit. Now, there was a debate going on about whether to go from 185, which is current law for statewide program, to what? Some Republicans said they wanted 300% federal poverty limit, which is what the limit is for Racine and Milwaukee.
Yes.
But they got 220. There was some question if that offer from the Assembly was really an earnest one or was a bargaining chip. And up at 220, which is still, I mean, it's something for the voucher program, but not as much as they would maybe would have hoped. And Vukmir said, I should have done something different, including get rid of the caps entirely.
Well, all this lays the groundwork for a number that impresses me. In the 18-19 school year, Fisco Bureau predicts 38,600 students in the choice program statewide, which is a pretty hefty increase.
And the dim argument during that hearing on Monday was you are taking state money to create a separate school system, and you're also, by doing this increase that you're doing, you're allowing school districts to raise property taxes by $30 million to offset the lost aid of kids going to these choice programs. You're sticking it to public schools and doing this, and that's been their argument, you know, obviously all along.
Yep. Okay, new subject. One of the governor's original cabinet secretaries, DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, who served one term as a state senator. Before that, she was a DNR board member. So she's had 6 years as secretary. She announced that she's joining the, I think it's Region 7 of the EPA, which
like
does not
supervise. Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, and something else.
Does not supervise Wisconsin. Yep. She sent in an email that she's very proud of her tenure and achievements at DNR. More people see us now as an agency that makes decisions using sound science, the law, and common sense. But she's had quite a very interesting run, hasn't she? I mean, I go back to the mining controversy, and now there's major environmental changes in the Foxconn deal. What else do you remember about
the DNR reorganization? It was unveiled, I think, last December as part of this budget. Step in talking to people this week will be remembered by some of the business community as somebody who was a different person to work with than past DNR secretaries, more business friendly. That obviously not sit well with the environmental community, so that they've been over backwards at DNR now to help businesses rather than being a regulatory agency. Environmental actions have dropped because they would say at DNR, well, we're trying to
reach them rather than get result
to that.
Yeah.
The question kind of becomes, did she really change the agency, like really revamp it, make it something different? I don't know that I would say that happened from talking to people this week, because it's a massive agency with a lot of people in there for a long time. A lot of people have left, by the way, in the last 6 years, unhappy with the direction of the state. There's a controversy over things like climate change being taken off the DNR website, the DNR magazine being targeted by Governor Walker.
Although that survived.
All this feeling of like that science is under attack from a Republican administration.
Yeah, and I pretty impressive numbers. The number of DNR scientists 4 years ago and how big the reduction is in the DNR science, the number of professionals.
In the reorganization debate before joint finance, one of the arguments made by Republicans was, well, this is not a research agency. This is a regulatory agency. We should focus them on their core mission. And that's been part of what Governor Walker's talked about while he's been governor. What is the core mission of government? What should we be doing? What can we get rid of that we don't do anymore? Like the magazine, which is going to survive in a truncated version. But to him, it's like, why are we as a government doing a magazine like this? Shouldn't that be the private sector?
One other change that we shouldn't overlook is making parks self-sustainable. Mm-hmm. No more state aid for parks.
Yeah.
They got to make it on their own, which means we could see some additional increases in park fees. What did you think about George Meyer, former DNR Secretary George Meyer, now Wisconsin Wildlife Federation Director? I believe Stepp probably had the weakest environmental protection record of any of the seven DNR secretaries that I have known. Of course, seven including him. she was very controversial.
I don't think anybody in the environmental community, or very few people, are going to like miss Kathy Stepp. Now, of course, they're not going to probably be fans of the next DNR secretary either, because they're still, remember, these secretaries are acting out the vision of Governor Walker, essentially, right? So they're not like necessarily... It's not their agency, it's Governor Walker's agency and what he wants done with DNR.
Okay. Okay, yesterday, Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark Jr. announced that I'm resigning effective the midnight
11,
on Thursday.
11:59 p.m. of Thursday, yes.
So he's no longer the sheriff as we speak today. You surprised by that?
It was kind of a weird thing with him where he was so expected to get a job in the Trump administration after being such a high-profile surrogate for the president during the campaign. Then he announced he was getting a job, even though the agency didn't announce he was getting the job. Then it kind of languished for a while. I was told by people close to the sheriff that he had gone over there, toured the facility. They had like the offer, like, a whole nine yards, just had to be signed off of. Then all of a sudden he says he's rescinding the acceptance of the offer in like June.
But wasn't it the Washington Post that said he had borrowed part of his thesis?
There's all that stuff going on. But remember, President Trump, if you're loyal to him, he's loyal to you. So there was this kind of weird thing where he said he had the job, but then said he turned down the job. Then he said, I'm going to be sheriff until 2019, end of story.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this. So you got to wonder, what's the opportunity? There are conflicting reports about he's going to join the Trump administration now. I saw a story saying he was expected to. I saw a story saying that's not going to happen. President Trump tweeted last weekend about the sheriff's book. And, you know, go out and look at it in the middle of all the Harvey stuff going on in Texas. Go out and look at Sheriff Clark's book. He has obviously made a lot of money on the speaking tour last couple of years. Will he be on that circuit again?
Right.
I don't know what to think where he's going to go. But there is an audience for Sheriff Clark because he's become the go-to conservative African-American voice in law enforcement for conservative media. So he's got a spot somewhere doing something.
He does. And he says, stay tuned. It'll be after Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And the graphic we're using on his departure shows a picture of him in 2011 and an updated picture of him, Stetson wearing, on the horse. But he was sheriff for 15 years. And before then, he worked 24 years and rose in the ranks at the Milwaukee Police Department. Then in the last 3 years, he became really a conservative. But now let's go forward. Walker's going to name a successor, but she or he will have to run next year.
For a full term, yes.
For a full term.
Now, the interesting thing, see what Governor Walker does. Will he pick somebody who will really play to the base, or somebody who get reelected, or retained, I should say, next November? That's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out.
Right. And while we're talking about politics, let's do some odds and ends. Tony Evers announces for governor as a Democrat. Within a few days, he runs this radio ad that you and I want to talk about. Let's listen to his 60-second radio ad.
Have you heard the saying, it's too good to be true? It probably is. Well, the Donald Trump, Scott Walker $3 billion deal for Foxconn might sound good until you look at the fine print. For starters, did you know that the Trump-Walker deal will take Wisconsin taxpayers 25 years just to break even? That means a kid born today could graduate from college by the time we might see a nickel on their return for our investment. But worse, those promised Foxconn jobs aren't even required to be jobs for Wisconsin residents. Contractors that build the facilities aren't required to be Wisconsin contractors. And the deal would exempt Foxconn from critical environmental protections. Sounds good for Foxconn, but what's in it for the rest of us? Just think if we invested that money in our schools instead. I'm Tony Evers, and I'm running for governor because we need a new approach that will grow the economy for the middle class and invest in our Wisconsin workers and our future. And that's why Tony for Wisconsin paid for this ad.
JR, I was surprised by that radio ad. He's going after him on Foxconn. Mm-hmm. He's saying no break even for 25 years. Now, do you think Tony Evers has got a focus group or polling that says this is a pretty radioactive upside issue for me? Help me understand why he's running this ad so early.
When we first started talking about the Foxconn deal, we thought, well, maybe it's going to be tough for Democrats to message it without seeming anti-job. And the initial coverage of the deal was all about the jobs. But then as the days turned into weeks, it became about the cost and the break-even point. And Democrats are sensing an opportunity right now to use this against Governor Walker and for themselves, for the campaigns. Andy Gronick originally said this could be something good for Wisconsin, then started saying, well, here are these problems he sees. Dana Walks announced he's a no vote before the vote on the floor. Tony Evers, smartly, and some people tell me, is talking about renegotiating pieces of the deal. So he's indicating we want Foxconn to come, but under the right conditions. And if, you know, some of these details are not worked out yet, I can renegotiate them after the election. So that's kind of interesting to see how they're doing that. But I'm getting the feeling that Dems are not seeing this as an issue for them, a problem for them message-wise. They're seeing it as an opportunity. And you look at the polling we talked about last week, the PPP surveys in those four Senate districts, that showed it not very popular. The polls about President Trump and if he's winning and bringing jobs back, and he was losing, according to the poll from MC Marist. That happened right after the Foxconn announcement. So something's going on that Dems see, you know what? We could use this. This could be a good issue for us.
But isn't there a danger side of running this? Mm-hmm. He's playing with live ammo here.
Yeah.
Because if a year from now, as I think I mentioned last week, maybe the week before, if Foxconn's showing construction and is hiring a few hundred people, doesn't this, isn't the governor able to say, see, Mr. Wax, Mr. Gronick, Mr. Evers, they are here. Mm-hmm. Isn't this playing with live ammo?
Absolutely. And the Republicans have told me that this is going to come back to bite these guys in the end. But let's focus primary for right now. Primary, I don't get the impression that Democratic primary voters are enamored with the Foxconn deal. I look at the vote in the Assembly. Three Democrats voted for it. All three happen to have the base of the project in their backyards. So primary-wise, I think this is a winning issue for Democrats if they can play it the right way with their base. Now, general election is a different story. How's that going to work out? Well, one way you could message it, I've been told this week, is why are you giving more money to Milwaukee? Now, not to pick on Milwaukee, but let's face it, every place I've lived, the biggest city in the state is somewhat like resented because it seems to draw resources. So if you're in Wausau or Clara La Crosse, you're going, well, why are you putting $3 billion into southeastern Wisconsin? And the Democratic argument now has become, well, when you put that money into that project, you're threatening my schools, my Medicaid, my A, B, and C. There's a way to message that. Now, I don't know if they can pull it off. Not sure if the shovels in the ground will negate that effort. But that seems to be the approach they're taking with this project and how to message it right now.
Well, I talked to a state official whose job took him to northern Wisconsin just in the last week, and he said he was astonished, surprised at the dislike, the opposition of this Foxconn deal, and I was surprised at his comment.
And look at how Governor Walker's been playing this lately. He's going out state and talking about the potential ripple effect. You know, the suppliers over here, you know, suppliers over here could really see a benefit from this. I think they're realizing they have to sell this more. Now, as this turns again, mm-hmm. will it become a winner for Walker? We'll see. But I think Dems are sensing an opportunity right now.
Okay. And just, I went through the governor's public schedules for this month, because it's September 1. And he did five of these Foxconn, your businesses can get some of the Foxconn mm-hmm. businesses roadshows, La Crosse, Eau Claire, Wausau, Green Bay, and I forget where the fifth one was. Okay. While we're playing political odds and ends, State Representative Dale Coinga says he will not go for the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. That announcement didn't surprise you.
No, I mean, it's...
didn't surprise me either.
In part because you look at the kind of dynamic of the primary right now. Kevin Nicholson is in. We know he's in. He's running full tilt. Leah Vukmir is not in yet, but she's going to be in, all but announced.
Yes.
Leah Vukmir, Dale Coinga's assumes he's in her Senate seat. So you have that dynamic. Leah runs for U.S. Senate. She has to give up her seat. There's an opening for Dale Coinga to run for her Senate seat. Some questions about that would be for Dale, for example. He's on joint finance right now. It's unusual for freshmen to be put on finance. So assume he wins a Republican seat. Would he make it back on finance next session? Because that's one of his babies. That's a consideration for him. But it seemed like he was kind of blocked and that he wasn't as aggressive out there moving toward a run as like Nicholson and Buchner were. Right. And then we still have Eric Hovde out there, you know, saying fall is plenty of time for me to make a decision about running for U.S. Senate.
But Coinga will run for Buchner's state Senate seat.
He said he was going to consider it.
That means that's a yes.
We all think. I never want to say absolutely, but I think it's a good bet right now.
Okay, finally on the political odds and ends, Mike McCabe, mm-hmm. who used to head the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, who wrote the book Blue Jean Nation, who's been out there, and his book, extremely critical of mm-hmm. both parties. He's going to announce as a Democratic candidate. You guys reported this.
September 12th.
September 12th in Curtis, Clark County. I looked it up. Curtis has a population of 216. If you're announcing for governor, don't you want to do it in something in a bigger media venue than Curtis, population 216?
Well, I can't tell you for sure it's going to happen September 12th with our shop, but I don't anticipate driving to Curtis. They're going to have a Facebook live feed. But
I
for McCabe, it is a symbolic thing. That's his family farm, he told me. They're going to do a tour around the state. They're going to hit Milwaukee and Madison and everywhere else as this kind of tour. But again, this is kind of a symbolic place to go to announce. McCabe also told me that he's going to limit his donations he can take. This is going to be a...
Did he say what limit?
Not yet. Grassroots campaign.
You go back to Garvey Lawton, can't be bought, and they tried to put limit. Go ahead.
So it's going to be a grassroots campaign, and it's interesting to look at the field. you have developing a top tier. And when I talk to people, they put Andy Gronick, Tony Evers, and Dana Walks. That's top tier right now.
Yep.
This other tier, your Bob Harlows, Mike McCabe's, they're people who don't have, and it's not because they're bad people, but because they don't have the fundraising capacity.
They hold no elective office.
They don't have the structure in place, the campaign in place.
Yeah.
The question becomes, like a Kelda Royce, can she break into that top tier if she gets in? I get the feeling people that they think she's going to announce. Kathleen Vinehout, when she gets in, maybe this month, next month, where does she get? Where can she break in? And right. Again, you know, it's maybe not fair, but money and infrastructure are huge because they allow you to spread the message. You do a lot of dairy breakfasts. You can do all you want of dairy breakfasts, but you only hit so many people through dairy breakfast. Radio, TV, Facebook ads, those are how we communicate with people who don't necessarily go out to these events, you know, every weekend.
And just real quickly, the governor's obviously quite sure that he's going to have a Foxconn deal and a budget because he's announced two trade missions. He's going to South Korea and Japan in September 8th through, let me check that, 16th, and Israel October 27th through the early in November. That's just interesting. I find it fascinating. He's going to South Korea. South Korea is the heart of this international conflict. But anyway, stock. Any PSs on travel missions before we go to stocks?
No.
Okay. Stocks.
So homeowners
rising.
Joint finance knocked out the forestry tax, so save you $26. So that's good. But you know, there's still a conflict there of we're buying down the property tax levy. And what I mean by that, for people at home, is we have state tax dollars, your income, sales, excise taxes, corporate taxes. Property tax dollars. If you pay for the property tax and use these dollars to knock that cost down so that you and I save money on our property tax bill.
$14 on the median valued home.
Eventually, when we have a recession and income starts to dry up and sales are dry up, you have all these things like forestry programs competing for a smaller pot of money, which means either you cut things or you have to do something else, be creative. Another good thing for homeowners is the Joint Finance Committee has not yet done the lottery credit, school lottery credit. That is going to be their final piece to make sure that the the property tax bill of the median valued home in Wisconsin will be lower in 2018 than it was in 2014. That is Governor Walker's bottom line of this budget, that your property tax bill, mythical median valued homeowner, will be lower when I run right after I run for election in 2018 than it was 4 years ago. Now, the issue is that home doesn't exist. It's a myth. My property taxes have gone up in Madison over the years. That's because
referendum passed.
We have referendums.
Yes.
So they are chasing a property tax number to meet one of Governor Walker's conditions.
And I think your assessed value has also gone up, which is a big part of that too. Okay, mixed.
So workers' compensation, we've had this debate now for several years in Madison about what's called a fee schedule. So if I get hurt on the job, let's say I tear a rotator cuff, and I get my surgery done.
On the job, yeah.
On the job. Place of a fee scale says you're going to get you'll be paid this much to do this operation. We don't have one in Wisconsin. Now, the backers of this current system we have say, well, look, we get people back to work quicker. There are fewer lawsuits. Why mess with a good thing? WMC, though, which is on this workers' comp council, it's Labor and Management Council, is saying we want a fee schedule to start to rein in these costs. You're going to have WMC and the Hospital Association and the Medical Society butting heads again, like two sessions ago, about this thing. Now, labor is part of that council. They're going, well, if we get a couple things that we want in that bill, we're okay with the fee scale. That's your deal. The question becomes, when it gets to the legislature, how's that going to play out with those big entities fighting it out over a fee schedule?
Mixed workers' comp. Falling.
Cindy Archer,
former Walker aide, both when he was county exec and gov.
There has been an effort by conservatives who do not like John Chisholm to make his life difficult. They challenged him at the ballot box last fall, didn't do very well. They have filed several lawsuits trying to accuse him of various improprieties when it comes to the John Doe investigations. Cindy Archer is one of them, said that she was targeted for prosecution because of her support of Act 10. Federal judge throughout the lawsuit, appeals court this week said, we're not going to revive the suit. The court said there are troubling accusations in your complaint, but you haven't proven that Governor Walker, we don't see that you were targeted because of your support of Governor Walker. And oh, by the way, these guys have qualified immunity, which means unless you have violated their civil rights, you can't sue these government officials. Now, That knocks out, you know, you could appeal to the Supreme Court, ask them to take it up. The U.S. Supreme Court takes very, very few cases.
Yeah.
It's very hard to see them taking this case up. There's still like one more thing I think hanging out there for John Chisholm. The McIver Institute had sued member over like the seizure of these electronic records that they weren't notified of this. That was tossed as well. That's on appeal. But I get the feeling from conservatives that while they're losing these court fights, they're not going to forget anytime soon. If they have a chance to go make John Chisholm miserable, they will try.
Cindy Archer goes 0 for 2 in the courts. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a new feature. We asked our Facebook friends. We put up a picture of one legislator's unique vehicle. Thank you for responding. Many of you got it right. So now we're going to show you a picture of this vehicle. JR, do you know? You don't want to guess, right?
I've got a good guess.
You got a good guess. Some of you got it. Several of you got it right. Maybe 10 or so. This vehicle is owned by State Representative Joel Clayfish. So, I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for September 1.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.